I don't know about you, although I suspect you're exactly the same, but I have about a dozen cookbooks at home. Only about a third of them do I ever open, and those ones I open, despite being utterly food-stained in many exciting ways, probably have three or four recipes each that I go to again and again, and that's it. These books we love, we buy, the bestseller charts tell us that we all buy them, but how much do we use them? And how are they faring in this age of digital access to everything immediately? We thought we'd try to get to the bottom of this question. So we're joined by two people who have thought about just this matter in many, many ways. Sue Hines is Group Publishing Director at Allen & Unwin and Murdoch Books. And Ali Gaunt is a blogger and co-author of One-Handed Cooks. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Now, Sue, how are cookbooks faring? I mean, 10, 20 years ago, they were amazing. Are they up or down since then?
Well, there's not an easy answer to that question, but they are faring well. So I think there are more individual titles being sold, but there are, as a category of book sales, it's lower. But then there's this other odd thing that happens, which is the very high best-selling books are selling more than best-selling books ever did before. So complicated.
Right. So the figures from Nielsen BookScan show that in the last 10 years or so, cookbooks have consistently been in the top category of non-fiction, and then non-fiction is the biggest market share here in Australia. So why is it you think they do so well?
Well, I think they are durable, they're affordable, they're portable, they're great gifts. People use them as inspiration. I mean, we all eat several times a day, probably. They're beautiful things. People just like them as objects. I think there are all kinds of reasons why they are still covetable objects.
I'm interested in that idea of them as covetable objects, because there is a kind of disconnect between utility and the fetishization of cookbooks. I know I do it myself. I buy the utterly beautiful ones and never actually crack the spine once I get them home. Do you think that is an actual thing with cookbooks?
You mean you don't even open them?
Well, I open them and I look at the pictures, but I never quite get around to going and trying to buy some sumac.
Well, I think lots of people probably fall into that category. They are really at their extreme limits. They are art. They are art objects, really. But then there are a whole heap of other books that people love, as you say. They end up splattered with food and they get used very regularly. So there's sort of various categories of cookbook within that bigger range.
Do you personally have one that you return to time and time again in your house?
I do. I have one that is held together by an alligator clip, and it is Marcella Hazan's classic Italian cooking book, and it's a paperback, and I bought it for something like $9.99 when that was the price of a book. It has no pictures in it. It's just black and white. It's completely and utterly falling apart, and it has so much food on it that my dog once mistook it for food and chewed the side out of it, and I still use it.
Yeah.
So there are books like that.
Oh, I so love that. When my grandmother died a few years ago, one of the things that the rest of the family kind of fetishized to remember her were the old cookbooks and those paperbacks that are held together by sheer willpower and a little bit of kind of something tomato-y, I think, half the time. Ali Gaunt, you started your blog One-Handed Cooks back in 2014, and it was a blog about how to cook healthy meals for babies and children. Now you've released a cookbook. Why go back to a cookbook if you've got a blog? What are the advantages of the book?
Well, I think the great thing about having a blog is that you've got this live feedback from people all day, every day. You know what works, you know what doesn't. People are very honest as well. But I think a lot of your really great content gets buried and you rehash a lot of things and you try and get everybody to see it. But sometimes it gets missed and it's quite sad. And I think it's, you know, a cookbook is something where you can put all your information onto a page that you want people to read, and you can put it in the order that you want them to read it, and you know that it's going to be in front of them.
So same question for you as for Sue. Do you have a cookbook that's your personal Bible that you keep returning to?
I do, but I have quite a few of them. And I think I had to laugh before when you said that, because I thought it's like when you're online and you're on Pinterest and you flick through and you pin all these fantastic ideas, and then you actually go and make yourself a piece of toast because you can't be bothered making any of it. So it's kind of that aspirational we have good intentions, but we don't always get there.
Totally. My cookbooks reflect back to me a better version of myself who will never exist. It's a nice kind of... So this rise of blogs or Pinterest or other ways that people share their foodie obsessions, how has that been felt in the cookbook industry?
It's a good thing. It's, as far as we're concerned in the publishing industry, having another source of authority on food, which is what bloggers and people who have own websites and various things, they are another place to go to look for a good cookbook author. So for us, it's a good thing. And I think that the average consumer doesn't make a choice about, I will have cookbook or I will have some online recipe. I think modern consumers go wherever. And if you're interested in food, then obviously the online world is just another source of good information.
Do you think that we readers apply a kind of hierarchy to that information? I mean, do the relationships they have with recipes and food information online differ from those they get from books?
There's possibly more authority in a book, possibly. Although if you go to a very trusted online site, I think it probably has exactly the same authority as a book. If you go to Jamie Oliver's site or something like that, then you would expect that he tests his recipes, he knows exactly what he's doing. So it's possible that the world of the book has, because it's solid, it's real, it's a thing, and you can pull it down off the shelf and you can go back to it, and or you can not open it at all in your case, but it's there, it has some kind of substantial presence in a way that the online world doesn't. But if I want a simple recipe for something, you know, just an everyday, I'm not going to go looking through all my cookbooks to find a spaghetti bolognese, although I'd go back to Marcella, actually. But for something that's just everyday food, I'd just, you know, stick that into Google and print it out, take it to the kitchen, cook it.
I was impressed to note the other day I was at the market and suddenly realised that I wanted to cook a particular Otto Lengi recipe, and I tried to Google it. And what he does on his website is provide the list of ingredients but not the recipe itself. You need the cookbook ultimately if you want to cook the dish, but if you're in the shop, the information you need is at your disposal. There are tricks like that you use, Sue, to kind of navigate the relationship between the online cook and the person who might need to buy your book?
No, I think that's fairly... that's a bit mean, really, isn't it? I think the two worlds work happily to help each other out, and we don't do that. We give all the information for a recipe. We don't just withhold some of it, hoping that you'll go and buy the book, because, you know, you probably won't. But if you're in a bookstore and you fall over his books and you see them there and they're so beautiful and you can't resist, then that's when you'd buy it. But you don't want to hold people to ransom.
The Irresistible Cookbook. You're listening to Blueprint for Living here on RN with me, Michael Williams. I'm talking with Sue Hines, who's Group Publishing Director at Allen & Unwin and Murdoch Books, and Ali Gaunt, who's the blogger and co-author of One-Handed Cook. Ali, what about you? I mean, you talked about that immediacy of relationship with the blog readership being a particular advantage. Did you find there were disadvantages to doing it that way?
No, I don't think so. I think, if anything, it helped us know what our readers wanted. But I do think that when we came to writing the book, there was definitely a lot more that went into it. You know, you're doing quite quick recipes and articles and things like that, so that you've always got new content on your blog. But when it came to the book, I think there was quite a lot of thought and a huge amount of work and recipe testing, and it was very thorough. So I think it gives, I guess, relatively unknown people who have blogs, but people do follow them, it gives them a sense of credibility, I think, as well. For a publisher to want to publish a book of yours is a huge compliment, and it was a fantastic learning experience for us as well. And I think it gives people, you know, that kind of assurance that they know that this has been looked at and, you know, tested, and they want to buy it.
Sue Hines, I understand that Australian publishing approaches cookbooks quite differently to elsewhere in the world. They're certainly incredibly successful, but we have a different relationship with our cookbooks. And part of that is to do with the role of photographs and images. How are we different?
It's not just Australia. The British Commonwealth world, that's UK and all of the English-speaking parts that are related to the British world. The Republican in me wonders why I just said that. But that is that we have photographs in our cookbooks. In the 1960s, there was a publisher in the UK called Paul Hamlin. He wanted to have he wanted everyone to have access to beautiful books, and so he put he created a whole line of photographic books, and cookbooks of were the main stars in that. In the US, they have much more. They do have photos in books too, but they have a huge number of books that have no photographs whatsoever. They are just a manual of instruction. I remember years ago in the 90s when I first went to America to sell our books, our Australian books, and I remember this American publisher saying to me, "Oh my God, how do you afford to have all of these photographs?" And I thought, oh, I don't know, maybe I don't know exactly what your costs are, but I know that our market really wants those photographs. They want those photographs to help them in the whole cooking, what it should look like at the end of the process. So,
and it does mean they are beautiful objects, but that must make the margin for success and failure harder. I mean, like that US publisher observes, that must make them expensive to put
indeed
together.
It does. It makes it a high-wire activity, publishing cookbooks.
You mentioned that they're first and foremost instruction manuals. What happens if there's an error in the measurements? I mean, how bad a mistake does it have to be before you have to do a reprint?
We always fix any errors that there are. We always fix those in the reprint when we reprint the book. And remember, these books are very expensive, so they don't just exist for Christmas. They have to keep on going out into the bookstores. There has to be a longer demand for them, so we fix them. But it's terrible. I mean, it's really terrible. It just means that people ring you up and abuse you, and they say nasty things on Amazon. But in the modern world, of course, you can do things. You can, on your Amazon page, you can put the recipe. You can say there's an error in this book and fix it. But it's not good.
A few years ago, there was an Australian cookbook that was printed, which accidentally said freshly ground black people rather than black pepper. I think that one
went
to reprint immediately.
There's another one that said a ground finger instead of ginger, because G and F, close to each other. Important distinction.
I think at least there's no confusion about whether you reprinted that situation.
No, that's right.
Might be time to go again. So, Ali, has the way you blog about food changed off the back of the experience of revisiting it to turn it into a book?
No, I think the only thing was that once we saw how thorough the method and the ingredients and how things were written, we desperately wanted to go back and change the 500 recipes that were on our website, but that's not going to happen. But no, I don't think so. I think, the book is an extension of what we do online anyway, and I couldn't think of anything that I would change.
Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
I've been speaking with Sue Hines, Group Publishing Director at Allen & Unwin and Murdoch Books, and Ali Gaunt, blogger and co-author of One-Handed Cooks. I have no doubt you have your own cookbook Bibles on the shelves at home, well-thumbed, covered in food, tied together. Let us know what they are and what it is that makes those ones so special in your life. You can do that via the Facebook page.